Your choir knocks my socks off time after time after time. Thank you. Thank you for singing one of my favorite songs. Though I confess that this sermon will encourage you to rest. And thanks to all of you for coming to church on a beautiful Sunday afternoon in the middle of a holiday weekend. As we prepare to observe a federal holiday that is older than any of us in this room. As you may know, Labor Day originated in the late 1800s, at a time when American factory workers were working 60-hour, 7-day weeks. Trade unions were fighting for 8-hour days, 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for recreation. Can you imagine 8 hours for recreation every day? Clearly, they were forgetting some things, but I digress. Labor Day celebrated workers who are too often overlooked. Mill workers, farm workers, garment workers, construction workers, to name just a few. Today, I want to honor all work, including but not limited to the work we recognize on Labor Day. I want to honor work that is obviously work and work that is too often unacknowledged. I want to honor paid work, unpaid work, labors of love, physical work, mental work, emotional work, spiritual work, work that is challenging and work that is rote, which has its own challenges. Volunteer work, justice work, domestic work. For most of us, work is one of the centerpieces of our lives, and what a range of experiences. Work can be back-breaking, mind-numbing, soul-sucking, demoralizing, humiliating, even traumatizing. And work can carry delight, accomplishment, learning and growth, exhilaration, satisfaction, and so much more. 2 years ago, I preached to you about the importance of taking Sabbath time, and so I wanted to come back and preach about work, these two practices that are such fundamental parts of being human. So as I honor work today, I want to remind you of the importance of balance. This sermon is not an ode to workaholism or even the Protestant work ethic. So what counts as work? Who decides? What is work anyway? Well, dictionary definitions for work and labor use words like effort, productive, accomplish, toil, exertion, activity, fatiguing, hard. Doesn't that sound like fun? As we know, some work is fun and some isn't. And almost all work has some drudgery involved. What I take from these definitions is that work is activity directed toward a goal. That's a pretty broad definition. So, what is work for you? That's actually not a rhetorical question. I want to give you a little time to do something I did while I was preparing this sermon, which was that I scanned my life beginning at childhood, thinking back over jobs I've had and work I've done, which are not always the same thing. So I invite you to give this a try. We'll take about a minute of silence, and I invite you to reflect on jobs you've had and work you've done. Welcome back. I'm guessing a minute was probably not enough time to go all the way through your life, but you can continue later if you would like. So when I did this exercise, which did take me more than a minute, I remembered doing puppet shows for kids' birthday parties, camp counseling, flipping burgers and way too many fried clams, secretarial work, teaching, so much teaching, and so much learning in many different contexts. Among other things, I realized how much of the work I've done over the years doesn't look like work to those who do hard physical labor. Much of my work today looks like a luxury. Sitting, reading, writing, thinking, listening. And it is a luxury. And it's still work. And it's still tiring. And much of it is invisible. As a classroom teacher, I remember being outraged when outsiders saw teaching as a cushy job, envisioning six-hour workdays and summers off. They had no idea how many hours most teachers work beyond the school day, or how exhausted teachers are come June. The work I do now, hospital chaplaincy, is interesting in that much of the time it looks like I'm doing nothing, like anyone could do it. Mostly I sit and listen. Sometimes I don't say very much. And yet it took years of graduate school training and supervised practice to be qualified to do this work at all, a few more years to get certified, and 50 hours of continuing education each year to stay certified. So, what's all the fuss? Well, for one thing, people in the hospital are really vulnerable, and it takes a lot of learning to do no harm, which is a really good starting place. And then, of course, there's the hope of being of service. What do chaplains learn? Well, part of it is the obvious, learning enough about different religions and common situations like addiction, abuse, grief, violence, poverty, racism, physical and mental illnesses, to have some sense of the territory. Part of it is learning to care for ourselves in the intensity of this work so we can do it in a healthy, sustainable way. Much of it is learning to listen in a very different way than we're customarily taught, listening without judging or fixing or problem solving or diminishing. Listening in a way that helps people tap into their own inner wisdom. Listening to bear witness with compassion, to honor each person's experiences, to sit with them in their pain. And some of chaplaincy training involves painful inner work, so that if someone says something that triggers a tender area for me, I can recognize this and respond skillfully without dumping my baggage on them. This work is joyful, heartbreaking, inspiring, emotionally grueling, deeply satisfying, and rarely boring. I love this work and am so grateful to be able to do it. And so I smile when, with some regularity, hospital staff say to me, "I could never do what you do. I don't know how you do it." The interesting thing is, I could say the same to them. I don't have the physical strength for most of their jobs, or the stomach for others. And that's the beauty of it. We each have different skills and training and proclivities. We need all of us. We need our differences. As I was writing this sermon, I kept remembering a book written 50 years ago that apparently made a deep impression on me as a child. Richard Scarry's What Do People Do All Day? This picture book shows children just how many people are necessary for things they take for granted, like a loaf of bread or water to drink. It's a pictorial version of Who Made My Soup? At the small hospital where I work, this interdependence is front stage and center. We all know each other, so if I need the temperature adjusted, I'm not just calling engineering, I'm calling Bill or Jesse or Don. When my printer jams, it's Alex to the rescue. If a patient needs a popsicle, Van brings it. If a bathroom needs cleaning, I'm calling Michaela or Maria or John. Their work is often invisible. And they have one of the most important jobs at the hospital, cleaning, preventing germs from spreading. There are the doctors and nurses, of course, but they can't do their work alone. They need all of us. And the patients are doing their own work, recovering from illness or injury, bearing pain and discomfort, making difficult medical decisions, staying put when they'd really rather go home, adapting to changes. Work that doesn't look like work. And indeed, patients often talk to me about feeling useless as they struggle with physical limitations, as they're not able to do what they usually do. Most of us have felt useless at one time or another in this society that prizes paid work. When we're unable to work, between jobs, unemployed, or searching for work. Searching for work is some of the hardest work around. Many of us have done work that may not be recognized as work. Raising children, caring for loved ones, caring for ourselves. Sometimes it's work to get out of bed in the morning, and I mean that very literally, to get up, get dressed, eat breakfast. These simple acts of daily living are not always simple. For some people, this can take the better part of a day. And then there are those who don't have a bed or breakfast, who live in their cars or on our streets, and for whom staying alive is their primary work. Sometimes living itself is the hardest work we will ever do. And so I want to say to you, whoever you are, however you spend your days, whatever work you do or don't do, you matter. Your presence, your existence, your precious uniqueness, your spirit matters. Your inherent worth and dignity does not depend on what you do. And I want to be very clear about this in a culture that too often values people only for what they do. Who we are matters. Our very existence matters. And also, what we do matters. Both and. This is not a contradiction. Our being matters, and so does our doing. What we do ripples out into the world, touching those near and far, having consequences we cannot imagine. This is Unitarian Universalism's seventh principle, to affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Of which we are a part. It's impossible to live a human life without benefiting from the work of others. Even the most rugged American individualist depends on products created by other people. Even someone living alone in a forest was cared for by others when they were young. There is no such thing as being human without the work of other humans. Our work binds us together. The interdependent web isn't only about humans, of course. Every living thing on this planet, as well as the air we breathe, the water we drink, the earth we live on, depends on what humans do. Some human work is destroying our planet and ecosystem, and some human work is trying to save it. What we do matters. As you leave later today, I encourage you to reflect on the interdependence all around us. You might start with this congregation, those who founded it, those who keep it alive by offering so many gifts, your board of trustees, all those who serve on committees, your amazing worship associates who invest so much time and thought in creating inspiring worship time and time again. The greeters, the ushers, the folks who prepare the sanctuary for worship, the choir and pianist, those who set up and clean up, those who bring food to share after the service. Who made your supper? And who have I forgotten? So many people, paid and unpaid, are necessary to this community's well-being. And that's just at church. This Labor Day weekend, I encourage you to reflect on the fruits of your labors, our labors, everyone's labors. May our work serve ourselves, our loved ones, our communities, and our world. May it make a positive difference as its consequences ripple outward. May we value work, and may we remember that we are more than our work. Our presence matters as much as our doing. Our presence matters as much as our actions, our being as much as our doing. And may we each find a healthy balance between work, rest, and recreation, as the founders of Labor Day intended. Amen.